They may be called the next generation, but they're the church of today. Reach, disciple, and mobilize students to share the hope of the gospel. This is the Gen Send Podcast with Shane Pruitt, Paul Wooster, and Lacey Villa Sr.
Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Gen Send Podcast. Thank you so much for being a part of this conversation. And it's kind of a fun thing, Paul and Lacey, you know, not that we only care about numbers and responses to this, but it's always fun to see our audience and our friends growing that's a part of this conversation. And just last week, we got some results that, man, this podcast has grown exponentially over each semester. And so thank y'all so much for engaging with it, sharing it with your friends, sharing it with those in your ministry. We know the only way this conversation grows and this tribe grows is because you are finding value in it and you're sharing it with the people you think would enjoy engaging with this too. So thank y'all, friends, so much for doing this. But we're excited about another conversation today. Lacey, Paul, how's it going, friends?
Doing great, man.
It's good. Well. And we have a friend with us, Shane, in your screen. Do you want to introduce Evan, some of you who have attended Youth Leader Coaching Networks or Collegiate Coaching Networks? I'm sure you've gotten to meet him. Or if Shane has came and spoke at your ministry, I'm sure you've gotten to meet him as well. Evan, we're so glad you're here. We love having you on our team. It's going to be, I know, probably a long conversation because once we all get talking, it's hard for us to stop.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, Evan serves as one of our journeymen at NAM. He's part of our staff, travels with me, just a young guy that loves the Lord, fresh out of college, graduated from Texas A&M. He's an Aggie, so that's a prayer request. Evan claims A&M is the Harvard of the South. Lacey, Paul, I don't know if he's trying to convince y'all of that. He's trying to convince me of that. And I'm like, you're literally the only one that calls A&M the Harvard of the South.
That's what other people say. It's not me. I don't say that. It's other people.
I feel like UT is more University of Texas. Oh,
she went with the rival.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, but I will say this, like, Evan travels with me literally all over the nation. And it doesn't matter where we're at. We can be in the South, the North, the East, the West. If Evan mentions being from A&M, there's always at least one person in the crowd that will give a whoop. They're everywhere.
We're a cult, baby.
Yeah. So Evan serves on our staff. We're excited for him to join the conversation.
Well, I'm excited about today's topic. We're talking about how to keep, attract, and develop next-gen staff. So that's youth, collegiate, staff members, maybe even some high capacity leaders that act as staff members. And when we were thinking about this next season, we were thinking about, hey, what do people talk to us about the most in person? And one of the number one questions that I know Shane and Paul get probably once or twice a week, if not more, is, hey, do you know of anybody that a youth or a college pastor that could help us fill this role that we have? Or do you know of anybody that we could call or reach out to? And there was a professor even at Southwestern named Richard Ross who teaches on this. And he said he estimated that at any given moment, he expects the total number of churches with funded positions to exceed the total number of student pastors available by several thousand. So several thousand positions is what he estimates are open and looking and waiting. And I know we've felt that even at our own church and ministry. And it's just tough. And so we hope today that we can help you guys with this process and give you guys some helpful tips, encouragement, and try to solve this problem a little bit. So what are some things, just to kick it off, what are some things that y'all look for when you're recruiting next-gen leaders for staff and even those high-capacity leadership roles?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and kick it off if it's all right, because I know Paul will have a lot to say about this as he does so much consulting with ministries and churches. And Lacey, you as well. And like you said, I know your husband, and I think people who have been a part of this Gen Send podcast conversation for a while know that your husband's a campus pastor. And so he's often having to interview people and hire people at y'all's campus as well. And Evan is constantly around leaders as well. So I'm sure you all have things to say. So I'm going to start more from the basic. I think four things we tend to overlook in an interview process because we just assume those things are there. And I want to encourage people to don't assume they're there. So when I'm consulting with local churches or ministries that are looking to hire, especially next gen leaders, I always say every interview should start like this. Number one, tell me your testimony. I'm always amazed by how many people go and interview with churches and they'll go, hey, they asked me all kinds of things about my gift sets and my skills and my history. And never once did they ask me to share my testimony. And so I think a lot of times we just assume that person knows the Lord, but they may be a very gifted and talented person that has no relationship with Jesus. And so we need to know that upfront. Have them share their testimony. Do they really understand what God has done in their life? Number two, I often ask people this too. Hey, if someone were to ask you to share the gospel, what would you say? And you go, wait, we're hiring a youth pastor, or a college pastor. We're hiring support staff. No. You need to ask them in an interview. Can you articulate the gospel? Because I'll just be honest, friends. Sometimes I'm shocked by people who are on church staffs that cannot articulate the gospel. Mm-hmm. Friends, if you can't articulate the gospel, you'll never be able to disciple others to be able to articulate the gospel. So those things need to be covered in an interview process. Share your testimony. If a lost person were to ask you, what must I do to be saved? What would you say? Can you articulate the gospel? Number three, question I think we need to ask from the very beginning before we jump into anything else is, when is the last time you personally shared the gospel with someone outside the walls of a church building?
Wow.
And then number four, who are you personally discipling in your life already? Because if you're waiting for a position and a paycheck to do that, that's not good. So here's the point I'm making. Like if you can't share your testimony, if you can't articulate the gospel, if you're not sharing the gospel in your own life and you're not discipling somebody as a posture of your own life, there's no way you'll be able to effectively lead others to do that. So I think those should be the four basic questions that we start every interview process with. Paul, Lacey, what else would y'all add?
Yeah, that's so good. And that really kind of gets to the point I was going to make is, do they carry the DNA that you're trying to reproduce in your ministry? Are they living the kind of lifestyle that you're hoping the volunteers, the student leaders, the students are living? And so that's all the most important thing is, are they carrying that DNA, so to speak? And really, the best way to tell that is, yes, sometimes it's interviewing someone from the outside, but there were certain points we had 15, 16 staff in our college ministries. Often, actually, most of our best staff members were from within, students that came up through the ministry that we knew personally, that had a good track record of faithfulness and fruit. And we were able to see that God really used that, those people, because we already knew them and we already had a relationship with those people. And so we were able to just basically we knew exactly more or less what we were getting. If you hire from within, now sometimes in a youth ministry, that could be hard because there's an advantage to collegiate ministry in that is they're graduating college and they're looking for sometimes they're looking for a ministry role, and you can kind of give them an entry level position in your college ministry, which there's some advantages to that.
Yeah, I think always hiring within it, you always want to be able to do that, you know, because they have the DNA, you know, their walk with the Lord, you've seen their discipleship relationships, things like that. And so I know that's always a win for ministries, but I agree, Paul. Yeah, it's a little more difficult with youth ministries, but I think if your church even has a young adult or college ministry, tap into that, lean into that. If you maybe are a little adjacent to it or even outside of it, make a point as the person who's hiring the youth pastor, looking for the next youth pastor to go in there and develop relationships and see who is over here that is already doing an incredible job discipling and leading people and evangelizing and all those things. So that's a good word. Shane, I know in the past, and every time you make this post, I feel like it always goes viral, but you write about some easy ways that churches can keep and attract next gen staff members. And so what are some of those things? Can y'all dive into those a little bit more?
Yeah. You're right, Lacey. That always gets a lot of feedback and just a lot of shares because I think everybody feels it. Whether you're a next gen leader, you want to be valued. if you're a pastor or a leader of a ministry, you're looking for great, you know, next gen leaders a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So always encourage, especially if you're the senior pastor of a church, or you're the director of a ministry, to go, hey, if you got some great next gen leaders on your staff or on your leadership team, do everything you can to keep them. Because Lacey, like you shared a while ago, there's literally thousands, if not tens of thousands, of churches and ministries that are looking for next gen leaders. They're looking for collegiate leaders or student leaders. So if you have a good one, I want to say do everything you can to yes. keep them. I think some practical things you can do is, number one, just value their family, value their time, especially if they're married with kids, value their time, protect their time, you know, maybe even help them with that. You know, I'm so thankful for the leaders we have at NAM. You know, every month I'll send in kind of a report of what God's doing in our team and in our ministry, what I'm doing personally. And a lot of people don't know this, but what they ask for is the biggest thing they want to see up front in bold print is how many nights I was in my own bed, meaning how many days out of the month was I with my family. And it's never get out there more. It's always peel back, spend time with your family, because we're always going to be our best leading healthy ministries if we have a healthy home life and a healthy family life and a healthy marriage. So I would say value their family. I would say number two, treat them like a minister and not like a babysitter. I think a lot of times, especially if they're student pastors mm-hmm. or even children's leaders, I think even college leaders can feel like this sometimes, is maybe they feel like the church at large just sees them as like glorified babysitters, and they're not. They are ministers of the gospel. They're evangelists. They're disciple makers. They're missionaries. So they should be treated and honored as such. I'd say number three, too, is like if it is a paying position. Now, listen, I know like a lot of positions are volunteer. There's more and more bivocational leaders. We praise God for that. But I'm going to say whatever your budget allows, pay them the most that you possibly can. Because mm-hmm. if you think about it, sometimes, if we'd be honest, McDonald's is paying our teenagers and college students better than our churches are paying their leaders. Because if you look at all the time that's being put in versus what they're getting compensated for, probably most youth leaders and most collegiate leaders are making less than minimum wage. So that means if there's a 16-year-old working the drive-thru at McDonald's, they're getting paid better than the youth pastor pouring in their life or the collegiate leader pouring in their life. And so I know we do the best we can with the resources we have, but I would say don't just default to going, oh, they're a collegiate leader, they're a student leader, we're going to pay them you know, with a 2-liter Coke and a bag of Lay's. No, like let's really like take care of them and honor them financially. I would say number four, too, protect them from wolves. Like I think one of the greatest affirmations a youth leader, a collegiate leader can have is when they know their pastor or their main director is also protecting them from wolves. You know, when those parents are just unnecessarily criticizing, listen, we all are not perfect. We all can be corrected, but when it's unnecessary, over the top criticism or attacks, when our leaders are protecting us, that makes us feel so valuable as well. And then I would say, you know, number five is if God does move his people, because God can move his people, meaning mm-hmm. if God does move that youth pastor to another ministry or that collegiate leader to another ministry, do we honor them? Do we send them out well? Do we celebrate them? Do we pray over them? Or do we try to make them feel guilty? Or do we try to talk bad about them because now they're now leaving? And I think we got to remember other Bible-believing churches and ministries are not our competition. They're our family. And sometimes God moves his family members to other local expressions of the church and ministries. So how do we honor leaders when they move forward? What I found is if a church or ministry does not honor their leaders when they leave and they make them feel guilty or they talk bad about them, that tends to spread. And yeah. people hear that that ministry or that church has that reputation. So it tends to keep people back from wanting to maybe apply for that position or to be interested in that position. So I say honor people well when God does move his people. Yeah.
Yeah, we want to create a sending culture, really. And yeah. That's one of the advantages as we're developing next gen leaders is that they may not all be called to stay in our local ministry. Many of them are going to be called to go plant churches or be missionaries or start new collegiate ministries, our youth ministries, they're called to go and expand the kingdom. And so I think actually the best way to keep staff that want to be around is have an open hand with them. Actually, the sharpest leaders, if they sense that you're trying to control them or manipulate them, the ones, the highest capacity leaders are going to be like, oh, I don't know, man. I want to feel like I'm empowered. So we want to move from being the heroes to the hero makers. And so that's part of also what we want to do is we want to elevate. And I love, this is a great example of Shane with Lacey and Anna and Evan and myself. Shane has this platform and he's sharing it with all of us. And that's exactly what he's doing with us. And so, man, that's why I love working with you, man. You really love us and empower us, even in this Gen Sen team. And so I have a great example with my boss, my buddy, Shane Pruitt, right here on the call.
Oh, man. Well, appreciate it. Paul, I'm making you the little heart symbol, you know, that Travis makes T. Swift up in the skybox.
Yeah, the Swift one.
So then I have one more thing that I think in addition to that, it's investing in their development. So if you have a staff member that's kind of that you're overseeing, you're the most important that you can be person you can be discipling is that person. And so you're creating almost a custom regular meetings with the person and a customized plan to help them grow and take their life, their personal spiritual life and their ministry skills. You know, vision, character, and skills, those are kind of three different categories you can help develop a person that's on your staff.
So good. I would also add, just more from the Gen Z perspective, the young adult perspective, is I think there's three things that really, really attract young, high capacity leaders to older leaders in the ministry or in the church context. Is one, first and foremost, is trust. I would say, I think a lot of times we say, maybe in job interviews or when we give a job description, that we are ultra empowering these people to do things. But when they actually get into the context of that job, it looks radically different than maybe what we promised. And that sort of maybe juke or that sort of shift will break trust more than it will develop it. And what is actually really good, and again, I don't want to make this a bragging on Shane podcast, but one way that I've seen it modeled really, really well is Shane has trusted me to do things that I have no business doing. And it's not a matter of if I mess up, it's a matter of when I mess up. And so with Shane having that trust, it's empowering me that, okay, he does see the giftings in me. He does see the things that the Lord has allowed to fall onto my life. And he wants to empower me to go do that. And with a leader like that, you will trust them because you have seen that that they're trusting the Lord in you. And then secondly, I would say is authenticity. And I know one thing that's huge right now, especially in the Christian circle, Christian bubble, is the Enneagram. And so one thing, what I don't mean by authenticity is some people are like, man, I'm sorry, I'm always late to meetings. That's just my Enneagram 7 or whatever. It's like, no, bro, you're just irresponsible. Or it's like, I know sometimes I can just come over top and be rude and be mean. That's just the Enneagram 3 in me. I'm just bold. I'm just whatever. It's like, no, bro, you're just a jerk. And so what I mean by authenticity is not that. But instead, more what I'm talking about is to attract young staff, you don't have to act young. To attract young staff, you don't have to be us. Instead, what we actually respect more and more is that you're so secure in who you are, but you love us because you see that we have perspective, we have giftings, we have exposure that you don't have. But if you try to form your staff, your culture into us, the next generation, and that's not you, you're not the jeans and sneaker guy, you're the pleated Dockers dude, stay that way. We'll respect you and we'll love you all the more for it. And then the last one is vulnerability, is leaders who, I know that the biggest lie that the enemy tries to say is that we'll lose respect, we'll lose influence with the young generation if we peel back the curtain and let them see our sin, let them see our struggles. But with our generation, and I'm sure every other generation, it's the complete opposite. The more and more Shane and Paul and Lacey and the people in my life have peeled back stuff and seen, hey, look, this is where I struggle. This is where I fall. This is where sin enters my life. I want to protect you by showing you my scars. That type of leader builds a culture around a young staff that wants to follow that leader because they're leading out of the vulnerability, out of the sin in their life. So don't let the enemy lie to you and saying, I've got to look perfect. I got to look young. I got to be trendy to attract staff.
Yeah, good one.
So good.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I would piggyback one little short thing on that is even in the way you lead your meetings and your kind of staff meeting time, get feedback, like show up. The more kind of you're deferring to the team, even if you kind of already know what you're doing, what you're wanting to do, man, get feedback and really hear and slow down. And at first, when I was leading our staff team, I would get all stressed. I got to be the leader. I got to know what to do. I got to lead these team building exercises. I had all these like weird like trust falls. What do I do? I'm leading a team. I don't know. But really, when I just showed up and say, hey, guys, I don't really know what we're doing. What do you guys think we should do? Like, they're like, oh, OK, let's figure it out. And we just had started a conversation. And that built a lot more trust than kind of having this facade of, all right, guys, I know what I'm doing. Let's get it done. It's right. Being real is always better than being right. You know, that's a Craig Gershell-ism, I guess. But
that's really good. I loved hearing all that from y'all. I know just during in the short time I've seen in ministry, and this has been something that I have even kind of like struggled with and just wondered about. I've seen a lot of pastors step away from ministries they originally felt God called them to. I've seen youth pastors who say, oh, I feel called by God to disciple students. And then a few years later, they walk away and they're in real estate or they're in some other field. And I've kind of struggled back and forth, like, oh, how do you step away from something that God called you to so clearly? And so, can you guys speak into that a little bit? How can we help young leaders even just have a deeper understanding of what calling is and clarity on what that even means, especially for full-time ministry roles? Especially, I know, Shane, you've been doing a lot of the calling out the called stuff and have seen a really cool response from that.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, we could do probably a whole nother like podcast conversation on just that, you know, discovering the will of God. In fact, Evan and I were, last week we were in Arkansas and we were having dinner with a pastor, a very influential pastor that God's doing incredible things for his church. And the whole conversation was about, how do you hear the voice of God? How do you know that's God's voice and not just your desires or your creativity or your own? Like God told me, well, maybe that was just your creativity or your own thoughts, you know? And so all that to say is, I think sometimes God gets blamed for a lot that we say he said or did, that he's like, no, I didn't, bro. You know, we love to talk about God's will. And God was like, I did not desire for you to do that. That was your own thing, you know? But I would say all that to say, big picture, I think what we call a big picture of God's will and providence and providentiality and sovereignty, that you go, man, like at the end of the day, God's will be done. God's movement cannot be stopped. God has a story that will be accomplished. So there's that high view of it, but then there's that daily view of God's will. Like, how do I know, like, God is speaking to me? How do I know God's will? I think one thing we have to remember when it comes to ministry is that, you know, sometimes God calls us to, I think there's three primary things that God can call us to. He can call us to a people, right? So you got missionaries going, man, I really have a heart for this people group. God's calling me to minister to this people group. Now, I don't really care where that is. I just want to minister to this people group. So, hey, maybe you go, I really have a heart for the Chinese people. Now, there's a big population of Chinese people in a certain part of Dallas, Texas. So I'm going to go pour my life in there. Mm-hmm. Or is God calling me to China? You know, for them, it doesn't matter. They're just like, I love the Chinese people. I have a heart for them. I want to share the gospel with them. I want to be around this people. So sometimes God calls us to a people. Maybe that's what it's like. People go, man, God's calling me to reach college students. I don't care what campus that's on. I don't care what state it's in. God's called me to reach college students. So I think sometimes God calls us to a people, and that's okay. Sometimes God calls us to a place where you go, I know without a doubt that God's called me to New Orleans. And it don't matter who's there. God's called me to love that city. He's in that city. He loves that city. He's for that city. He's already moving in that city. I want to be a part of what God's doing in New Orleans. So I think sometimes God calls people to a place, and that's okay. And only God can reveal that to you. And then sometimes God calls us to a season. Because I used to struggle with that too. And it like to go, man, this guy was a youth pastor or a worship pastor for 10, 15 years. Now he's selling real estate. Did he miss God's call? Like, why did he walk away from that? Did he burn out? And there could have been a burnout, but maybe not. Maybe God just called him to a season to go, for a season, I'm calling you to pour into students for this decade. But after this decade, guess what? Now I'm going to call you to be a marketplace missionary. As you go sell homes, you're now going to be a missionary for me as you go sell homes. And that's okay. So I think we just kind of got to evaluate, how's God calling me? Is he calling me to a people? Is he calling me to a place? Is he calling me to a season? And only the Lord can reveal that to you. And you go, well, how do I know that? Sit at the feet of Jesus. I think that's one thing that we've determined over and over. How do I know my wife's voice? My wife can speak up in a crowd of 1,000 and I can hear her voice. Why? Because there's intimacy there. The only way you're going to recognize the voice of the Lord is intimacy. You can't shortcut that. It has to be at his feet, and it's spelled T-I-M-E, time. But also, I just want to remind us two things, especially as younger leaders. Number one, more money and a bigger platform is not always God's will. Isn't it interesting how we think if we get an invite to a bigger platform for more money, that must be God's will? But I think sometimes we're chasing a platform or we're chasing a paycheck and we're not really listening to the voice of God. So I think we just need to be reminded as young leaders is more money and a bigger platform is not always God's will. I think we just assume it is. All right. And then the second thing I would say this is don't quit before you finish. Meaning like be all in where you're at. God may move you, right? You may be there for a season. You may think you're going there for a lifetime and God moves you for a season. When we planted C3 and I was the pastor of C3 and we're part of this fast growing church, it's like, this is what I'm gonna do for the rest of my life. And God's like, no, you're not. And so God, you know what I mean? Like it was for us, but it's all in. Here's what we tend to do. I think leaders, we can all be guilty of this, is we're serving in a ministry that God has posted us at. And we're constantly looking to our left, looking to our right, looking in front of us for other opportunities. That's not being all in when you're constantly looking for the next opportunity. So I'd say be all in where God has you. He's sovereign. You're there because of his yes and amen. When he wants to move you, it will be because of his yes and amen. So be all in. Don't quit before you finish. And don't have your eyes looking for the next opportunity. Yeah.
That's good. If I could add just one thing as in the younger guy, I would say for me, it's a big part of my story is I was junior year of college. I've been pursuing law school for the last 5 years. As a junior in high school, I knew that I wanted to go into law school. And so junior year of college, I had been pursuing that for about 4 years, 5 years by that point. And so with that being said, one of the things I wanted to do was I was getting ready to start to apply to some dream law schools. With that being said, there was a lot of conviction in my heart when it came to being called to ministry. And my mistake is I prayed about it. If I didn't pray about it, I'd be in law school right now. I'd be a lawyer.
famous last words. Just pray about it.
That's right. That was the mistake. Yeah, and so from there, of course, the Lord unravels this. I surrender to ministry. And it's the cheesiest answer I give, but I think it pertains to your question, Lacey, is people ask me now, I get to travel with Shane, I get to speak on my own, I get to do a ton of stuff that I have no business doing. And people always ask me, what's next? What's going to be next? And I go, this might be the cheesiest answer ever, but if the Lord can rip law school out of my hands, something that I've been pursuing and working so hard on, if he can take that out of my hands, he can take anything. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to operate my life by being obedient in the next 5 minutes.
That's good.
And then I'm going to see, Lord, am I in there? Great. Now the next 5 minutes and the next 5 minutes and the next 5 minutes. I love Corrie Ten Boom's quote where she says this. She goes, I hold all things loosely so that the Lord doesn't have to pry anything out of my hands. I think that that's so powerful that for me as a young guy, it's my prayer and my desire. It's not always easy is, Lord, let me be just as faithful where I am today, doing what I'm doing today, as if you called me in Nowhere, Texas, to be a youth pastor of 3 students. And my heart isn't aligned there. I don't know if I would be just as faithful. So what I have to do daily is I have to put my flesh to death. And I want to be like Paul in Acts 26, verse 19. He goes to King Agrippa and he says this, therefore, O King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to the heavenly vision. That he goes through his entire calling that the Lord had called him to. And he goes, and I've done it. I've been obedient. Even in the hardest moments, I have carried out the heavenly vision. Yeah. And so what I try to do is I try to be obedient in the next 5 minutes. And I don't know how practical that is, but the Lord has really taken care of me as long as I have, like Shane said, mm-hmm. sit at the foot of the cross.
No, that's great. And I think having both y'all, those are such good answers. And thinking on the ministry leader side, I find it to be really helpful to have avenues for recent graduates to spend 1 or 2 years almost like an internship or whatever you want to call it, but it's an entry-level position that they're just committing to 2 years. And they're going to be in a certain role. They're going to have responsibilities, but they're also going to be mentored and discipled by the top-level leaders. That if you can create an environment like that, that can be a really powerful way for many of the ones that jumped into our two-year program in our ministry in Chico. They sensed a call to longer term college ministry in the process of that. At first, they're just like, hey, 2 years? Like 2 years is still relatively short term, you know, when you think about it in the grand scheme of your life. And so they actually just saw it. They had a sense of calling to do that 2 year program, but they didn't really know what they wanted to do long term. And I was totally fine with that. But a majority of them that went through that process ended up feeling a call or sensing a call to longer term ministry. But we also had others. We had a guy that went on our staff in the college ministry that ended up, now he's a lawyer. So we had the reverse of your story, but
I love it.
And that's great. I mean, if that's what God's calling you to do, but he was able to serve. He was a really sharp guy, very articulate, very driven. He was able to do a great impact with this short-term commitment. So that's just a category that I have that I think is really helpful for ministry leaders to think about is someone could be called to a short season of serving on your staff. And that can produce a great pipeline of future leaders, not only for your ministry, but for other ministries and just the kingdom in general. So consider that.
Yeah, that kind of leads into my next question about, and we've talked a little bit about the importance of developing young leaders and how important that is for young staff members. How can pastors who are typically really limited on time prioritize discipling and mentoring their young staff members? And yeah, let's say you only have 2 years with a staff member. What would y'all recommend are some key subjects or competencies, whatever you want to call it, that you would really want a pastor to prioritize with those staff members or with those young leaders?
Yeah, I love that question. I think, you know, I think back as my time as, you know, pastor at C3, we were all young. You know, I was in my early 30s to mid 30s, and I was the oldest. I was the old guy and stuff, you know, so we were all young. And so as I'm learning, I'm trying to pour in as I'm learning. But I would say as a pastor, as the lead of your ministry, whatever that looks like, whether it's local church, on-campus ministry is, I mean, one of the most important things you can do is to serve your leaders, because you're going to be able to serve the people of the church that God's entrusted you with, or the people of your ministry that God's entrusted you with, the better you get at serving leaders, because you can't do it all. I mean, think of Jesus himself. He had 12, and even one of those went astray. So if you think of anything beyond that, even if your ministry is 20 people, that's more than you can handle by yourself. 25, 50, 100, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands. That's way more than you can handle by yourself. So you got to pour into others who can pour into others. And I think, so what do we pour into those young leaders? What do we want them to know and to do and to understand? Well, if you think about it, really, Jesus really only told us to do three things. If you think about it, we were really only told to do three things, and everything we do should prop up those three things. He gave us the great commandment and the great commission. He said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. So seek the Lord. We want to teach young people to seek the Lord, that they would serve out the overflow of their own worship of Jesus. You know, I think a lot of times we have gifted and talented people, and sometimes their gifts and talents take them further than their character and integrity can sustain them, because we're not teaching them to walk with the Lord. So seek the Lord. And it says, love your neighbor as yourself. Well, healthy leaders are more apt to lead healthy ministries. I think sometimes we leave that loving self out a part of the great commandment, like to take care of yourself, to have a healthy soul, to have a clean heart and clean eyes. Healthy leaders are more apt to lead healthy ministries. So seeking the Lord, being healthy yourself. Number three, loving and serving people, your neighbor, love your neighbor, love and serve people. This isn't a calling to stardom. It's a calling to servanthood. And then the other thing he's told us is what? The Great Commission, go and make disciples. That's ultimately what we're called to do, is go make disciples. And that's part of evangelism and discipleship. I always think those are two sides of the same coin. Is like, when we're making disciples, we're evangelizing. When we're making disciples, we're equipping people how to live on mission and how to articulate the gospel and share their faith. So really, those are the only things God told us to do. Everything else should prop up that. And anything we're doing that doesn't run through that filter, we may need to set to the side. Because I think a lot of times, things really suck our time and energy that God never even asked us to do. We're just busy. And really what we need to do is just stick to the Great Commandment, stick to the Great Commission. That's what the Lord told us to do. And so let's coach and help young leaders to do just that.
That's great. Yeah. And a lot of it is not necessarily providing new content, and much of it is coaching. So you're helping them apply what they already know. Hopefully, if they came through your ministry, they've been taught a lot of these things already. But I do think, because the higher you rise in leadership, and once I jump into staff roles or they're leading ministries and teams, the enemy has a target on your back. And so it's actually foolish to assume that every one of your ministry leaders is faithfully walking with the Lord and not struggling with anything.
So true.
And that's where leading with vulnerability is so important, because then you can be like, hey, this is where I'm at. This is what I'm dealing with. And there is this healthy honesty among your team. But I think regular check-ins, regular meetings, when we had a large staff, I made sure that every one of our staff members had a weekly discipleship meeting, not with me, because my wife was able to help out, but a higher level leader was able to meet with a newer leader. And so everyone was getting discipled personally once a week, just as an ongoing part of their staff development. We're like, hey, if you're on staff, you're going to be a disciple, and you're going to make disciples. So they're expected to be discipled by someone, regular weekly meeting with accountability and training and custom coaching. And then they're also discipling a number of students where they're being open and honest with them, and they're modeling the lifestyle. It really is. It's simple, but it's not easy. It costs. Actually, leading staff well is the highest cost. It should be like the greatest investment of your time, but it's also the greatest benefit. It's like, it's where you're going to see the most long-term fruit. And so it'll be the hardest and the most fulfilling part of your ministry, probably, if you do it well.
That's a good word right there at the end. I love that. I would love to just end with this. I know a lot of times people in ministry see these next gen roles as developmental, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But a lot of times that creates a lot of turnover, especially as people build families, they move on to different roles just because of time or money or whatever it is. So how can we create more longevity in next gen ministries? What are some do's and don'ts to care for these staff members so that they are able to stay in these roles for longer than a few years?
Yeah, I think how we approach it, Lacey, exactly what you're saying, is how you approach it is what I think changes our mindset, is to go, hey, this isn't a stepping stone. This is a mission field that God has called me to. Now, here's the deal. It's like, you may be a student pastor, a collegiate leader, for a season, and then God move you into something else. You may be a church planter, or you may be a pastor at some point after that. And that's okay, but don't approach it like that. Don't go, hey, I'm going in, I'm putting in my 2 years to be a youth pastor. You know, I'm just going to grin and bear it, because ultimately I want to go be a pastor. You know, like, no, be all in and where you're at now. Again, a while ago, we talked about it. God may be calling you to a people. He may be calling you to a place. He may be calling you to a season, but the Lord determines all that. So I'd say be all in. So how do you approach it? Be all in. In fact, I encourage churches and ministries to ask that question and part of that kind of interview process. Do you see this as a stepping stone, or do you feel like God's calling you? And being flexible enough to go, God may move them after 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, whatever. But how do you see it going in? That you're all in. God's called me to this. This is of uber importance. And then I would say the second thing is realize how important it is. We know statistics alone tell us 77% of all Christians surrender to Jesus before the age of 18, 95% before the age of 30. So when you think of the importance of next-gen ministries, whether it's children's ministry, student ministry, collegiate ministry, young adult ministry, it's uber important. That's the front lines of our evangelical effort. So if you go, man, I just love to see people come to know Jesus, be discipled, mobilized to go reach other people with Jesus. Hey, next gen ministry is where it's at, because that's where it happens, you know? And so, yeah, I would say, you know, like advocate for your ministry. It's okay to speak up, because I remember getting this question whenever I was a youth pastor. And then you always hear youth pastors and college pastors get the same question, is they'll say, hey, you know, that sweet, you know, little, well, you know, well-meaning lady in the church will go, you know, son, you do such a good job. When are you going to become a real pastor? No, no, right. You are a real pastor now. You know what I mean? Like, yep. Ultimately, you are a real minister. If God has called you and you're leading people and shepherding people, you're a real minister. You don't have to wait one day, you know, like. So all that to say is, like, how you approach it from the beginning, and then value the ministry for what it is. And then I think you'll see if what you're doing is a high, high calling.
That's so good. And I would say, as a young adult or youth minister or college minister, you want to also communicate the value of what you're doing to the team and the larger church or the mission, or, you know, you want to tell the story of what God is doing through your ministry in a humble way. But also, if, like, for example, if you're stuck financially and you're capped out, you're struggling financially, there's nothing wrong with setting up a meeting with some of the leaders of the church and say, hey, I love this ministry, I love what we're doing, but just to be honest, as a family, I got to provide for my family, and we're struggling financially. And so even asking for a raise, you know, or if in collegiate ministry, we get some versions, we got to raise a raise. So we were able to go raise our support. Sometimes that is a big piece of keeping someone in the game. The financial piece is not to be overlooked in this conversation. I know Shane already brought this up, but I do think on both sides, is keeping an eye on that side, that financial aspect can be really helpful to make sure a family is set up to thrive over time. And as they age and as they get kids and as more responsibilities are put on their plate, it makes sense to kind of have that financial increase as well. So, but personally, if I had 1,000 lives, I'd give them all to college students, right? Because they're so,
I love it, Paul.
They're so strategic. Yeah. You know, it's not a junior varsity calling, you know, it is the calling that for many people, it's the most strategic investment of their life. And so it's not for everyone, but for those of us that are listening to this podcast, maybe you're one of those people that you're going to be a lifer. You're going to just keep your head down in this next gen space and find a way to make disciples of young people for the rest of your life. And that's what we're praying for. We're praying for some people like that are just going to stick with it. And so that's our plan. We're going to invest in this next generation.
Lacey, I can't help but think of somebody that me, you, and Evan deeply love and respect, Greg Bradford, who was in student ministry for a long time at a very large church and then moved into a campus pastor role at a very, very, very large campus, and was in that role. And he said, hey, deuces, I'm going back to student ministry, you know? Yeah. So, like, yeah, I love that. You know,
it's so good. The last thing that I'll add is, if you're maybe a senior pastor, or you're in a higher level executive role at a church, what you celebrate is what you're going to cultivate. It's that old leadership principle. Think about it, because it can get down to the minute level. If everything that we're doing as a church is pushing to the Sunday morning big church service, right? That's what we used to call it, big church. If that's what you are driving your entire vision for, it is minimizing to that youth pastor, to that collegiate pastor, to that youth pastor, that's what they're doing. And so what they're seeing is they trust your leadership. They trust you as a leader. And so what they're saying is, that's the varsity. That's the MLB. That's the NBA. I need to get to that stage so that when I become a senior pastor, I've made it. I'm no longer in AAA. I'm no longer in AA. I've made it to the senior pastor role. And so what you celebrate is what you're going to cultivate. For you as a leader, maybe the most humble thing to do is to say, look, Sunday mornings, what I do when I preach on Sunday, that is no better. It's a difference of role versus rank. It's I what I do on Sunday mornings, what I do as a senior pastor, carrying our vision, is no better, no more important than what you're doing in that youth room. It's just all different roles versus rank. And so what we celebrate is what we're going to cultivate. And so if we're like, man, I'm seeing so much turnover of guys leaving to go do this, we might accidentally be playing a huge role in that because we value it way more than maybe they do as well.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. I know a lot of the people, what's been really cool going into Youth Leader Coaching Network and Collegiate Coaching Network is we've seen a lot of these lifers, and a lot of times they're leading our groups or leading from the stage, whatever it is, at these events. And it's incredible because they have like 20 plus years of ministry and they are just still going, and they love students and they're so bought in. And that's been one of my favorite things to see at those coaching networks and in those cohorts. Evan, I know you've gotten to be a part of those. Why don't you just tell everybody listening a little bit about those, especially if they want to grow as a leader, or maybe they are considering sending a staff member to one of those?
Yeah, honestly, I might be a little biased, but it's my favorite thing that we do, this and the Collegiate Coaching Network. Those things are so powerful because they go all the way from the practical side of ministry. So how to recruit, retain volunteers, how to run a meeting, all the way to the super spiritual side, how to lead from a healthy soul, how to have longevity in ministry. Mm-hmm. Everything that we're talking about, what you get to encounter is in these cohorts and then the in-person gathering at the end. We get to go in depth of what that actually looks like. For me, every time it's like gold, because I get to see as a young person, I'm like, okay, I'm going into these next steps. This is what I'm doing. And I'm getting to meet some legends, people who have been in the youth ministry longer than I've been alive, and that's humbling. But I have learned so much from that, and I cannot emphasize it enough. Even when I'm on the road, like when I'm not doing anything for NAMM specifically, if I meet a youth pastor, I'm like, bro, you got to check this out, because I've seen young guys and older guys alike, lives change, because when we collaborate together as a great cloud of witnesses, when we are actually together seeking, gleaning wisdom from one another, gleaning experience from one another, gleaning mistakes from one another, we can avoid the pitfalls that other people have fallen into. I really can't emphasize it enough. It is my favorite thing we do because it's super practical and it's high spiritual as well.
Yeah. And we will have links to both of those coaching networks in the show notes, as always, along with some other articles and resources for you guys as we continue to dive into this and hopefully continue to solve this problem. We're praying for more laborers, and we just love for you to join us in that prayer. But we hope this episode has been helpful and encouraging, and we can't wait to just continue to hear from you guys and connect with you guys in person. We'll see you next time.